Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, deinem Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich riesig, dass du hier gerade zuhörst, dass du eingeschaltet hast, denn ich habe heute einen ganz besonderen Interviewgast, der mich persönlich wahnsinnig inspiriert und begeistert und ja, ich feiere diese Frau so sehr und zwar geht es um Emily Penn. Und Emily Penn ist eine ganz junge Frau aus England, die sich zum Ziel gemacht hat, unsere Erde bzw. unsere Meere vor allen Dingen zu beschützen und zwar ganz konkret vor dem Plastikmüll bzw. dabei zu helfen, mehr Bewusstsein dafür zu schaffen, wie viel Plastikmüll mittlerweile in unseren Meeren ist und was das für eine unglaubliche Katastrophe ist. Und Emily hat schon die Welt umsegelt. Die Frau ist einfach der Knaller. Es ist wirklich unglaublich. Während des Interviews, ich war einfach konstant am Staunen und so inspiriert. Und Emily hat ein Projekt, das heißt Expedition, wo wir darüber sprechen werden, wo sie nur mit Frauen auf einem Segelboot durch die Welt segelt, über die Weltmeere segelt und vor allen Dingen darauf aufmerksam macht, welchen Effekt auch die Chemie aus dem Plastik auf die Gesundheit hat von uns Menschen, insbesondere auch auf uns Frauen. Und es ist, ja, dieses Interview ist, da ist so viel dabei, denn Emily erzählt, wie sie zum Beispiel damals, als sie ihr Praktikum in Shanghai bekommen hat, nicht mit dem Flugzeug geflogen ist, sondern über den Landweg nach Shanghai gereist ist und wie sie auf Tonga war und dort den größten Plastic Clean-Up gemacht hat, den es gab, mit, ich glaube, 56 Tonnen Plastikmüll, der da zusammengesucht worden ist. Und es geht um so viele Themen, aber vor allen Dingen, was ich das Schöne an diesem Gespräch mit Emily fand, diese Frau ist eine unglaubliche Optimistin und man spürt ihren Optimismus, man spürt die Hoffnung, die sie hat und man spürt einfach auch die Freude, die sie hat, sich für dieses Thema einzusetzen. Und wenn du mich schon länger kennst, weißt du, ich bin auch ein unglaublicher Verfechter von unserem Ozean, von unseren Meeren und ich finde, es ist eine Katastrophe wirklich, was wir mit der Natur machen und deswegen freue ich mich so sehr, heute Emily hier auch die Plattform geben zu können, von ihren Projekten zu erzählen, davon zu erzählen, was sie gesehen hat auf ihren Reisen oder was sie immer wieder sieht auf ihren Reisen. Und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude mit diesem Interview. Das Interview ist auf Englisch. Es wird aber in Kürze auch Untertitel geben. Wir sind gerade dabei, das Interview auch zu übersetzen. Das heißt, es wird in Kürze Untertitel geben. Schau einfach immer mal bei YouTube vorbei, wo du ja die Podcasts auch immer anschauen kannst bei mir auf dem Kanal. Und dort wird es dann zu dem Video Untertitel geben, die du dann einfach anklicken kannst. Und du wirst dir das Interview dann quasi in geschriebener Form auch auf meiner Webseite durchlesen können. Also für alle, deren Englisch nicht so gut ist. Ansonsten, ich kann dir auch immer nur empfehlen, falls du denkst, oh, auf Englisch, ich verstehe das nicht, hör es dir trotzdem an, denn zum einen wirst du dadurch auf jeden Fall dein Englisch verbessern und zum anderen verstehen wir immer viel, viel mehr, als wir glauben, auch wenn unser Englisch nicht perfekt ist. Meins ist auch nicht perfekt, darum geht es überhaupt nicht. Es geht darum, in Kommunikation zu gehen und uns gegenseitig anzufangen zu verstehen. Und mir ist es ein Riesenherzensanliegen, dass du dieses Gespräch hörst, dass du dieses Interview hörst. Und ich wünsche dir ganz, ganz, ganz viel Freude dabei. Bevor es jetzt gleich losgeht mit dem Interview, wollte ich dir noch eine Sache sagen. Und zwar habe ich eine Überraschung für dich. Denn ab heute gibt es ein neues Package von mir, kostenlos einfach, denn ich habe mir überlegt, wie ich dir ein kleines Geschenk machen kann, eine kleine Freude machen kann und wie ich so ein paar Sachen, die ich immer wieder gefragt bekomme, wie ich das mache, dir zur Verfügung stellen kann. Und deswegen habe ich ein E-Mail-Paket zusammengeschnürt, kostenlos. Das heißt, die Higher Self Inspirations. Und die Higher Self Inspirations sind 4 E-Mails, die du bekommst. In der ersten E-Mail bekommst du meine Manifestationsformel, in der zweiten E-Mail bekommst du meine Morgen- und Abendmeditation, meine ganz private, die ich dir aufgesprochen habe, damit du sie einfach auch machen kannst und anhören kannst und Zugang zu meiner privaten Spotify-Meditations-Playlist, die Musik, die ich persönlich höre, wenn ich meditiere. In der dritten E-Mail bekommst du meine besten Buchtipps und in der vierten E-Mail und Filmtipps auch, genau, und für Spiritualität und persönliche Weiterentwicklung. Und in der vierten E-Mail bekommst du die 3 meistgehörten Podcast-Folgen aus dem Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident. Und das ist quasi einfach so ein Package, um dir eine Freude zu machen und dass du dir einfach holen kannst, um in deiner spirituellen Praxis zu bleiben, um dich inspirieren zu lassen, um ein bisschen an dir zu arbeiten, um deine Morgenroutine zu entwickeln. Und genau, wenn du dir das holen möchtest, dann findest du den Link hier auf jeden Fall in den Shownotes. Und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude damit. Ich hoffe, es gefällt dir. Und ich würde mich freuen, ja, wenn es dir gefällt. Genau. Und jetzt geht's los mit dem Interview mit Emily Penn. I'm so grateful and happy to have one very, very amazing, inspiring woman in the podcast today. Her name is Emily Penn. She's traveling the world, sailing the world, saving the oceans. And I met her 4 or 5 years ago on a conference here in Berlin. And since then, I was like a secret follower on her journeys. And I'm really, really grateful that you took the time to give me the interview, Emily. Hi.
Hi, Laura. Great to be here.
Thank you so much. So you are right now in London, right?
I am, yes.
Okay. And you are born and raised in the UK?
Yes, in Wales, actually.
In Wales. Okay. So I would like to just start there. So you were raised in Wales and now you are sailing the world and saving our oceans from plastic. What happened in between?
Yeah. Well, I grew up sailing small boats, little racing dinghies about the same size as a bathtub. And so spent most of my growing up years on the sea, in the sea, and generally being outdoors and loving our natural world. But then when it got time to choose my career, I decided to go and study architecture. And so I kind of gave up the sailing world to go and study in landlocked Cambridge and went off to study architecture. Absolutely loved it, really wanted to be an architect. And when I lined up my first job, I wanted to go and do it in Australia.
Okay. How did that happen? Like, did you just apply for a job in Australia?
So part of training to be an architect, you basically have to do a year in industry. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, if I've got to get a 1 year job somewhere, I might as well go somewhere exciting and different. And so decided that I wanted to go and spend some time down in Australia for that year job. But also the previous year I had studied out in Shanghai, looking at an eco-city that was a completely zero carbon city being built on this island off Shanghai. But because I was studying this zero carbon city, I thought I can't very well take an aeroplane to get there. Yeah. And a massive carbon footprint along the way. So I ended up having this amazing journey by train and camel and horse across Europe, Russia, Mongolia, and down through China.
And okay, so just to get that clear. So before you went to Australia, during your studies, you went, you did an apprenticeship or what was it in Shanghai? Was it a?
Was basically studying for my dissertation. Okay. Past my degree.
Cool. And you thought, I am in Cambridge and I have to go to Shanghai, but I don't want to take an airplane.
Exactly.
Okay. So you went by train, by bus, by horse, by foot, by car or? Not even bike. Okay.
Any means possible.
Okay. How long did it take you?
It took 6 weeks.
Okay, that's amazing. And just like take me to your head. Like when you started that journey, I guess it's not the way you usually travel or your friends travel. Like because usually we are used to take an airplane, right? I mean.
Exactly.
So what were your thoughts? Have you been excited? Was it like, were you afraid? Was it just clear there would be an adventure? What was your inner world back then?
Yeah, I think for me, I've always been up for an adventure. Yeah. So, you know, it was obviously it made sense with the project that I was doing. But I think a lot of it for me was just wanting to see the world. Mm. And the idea of taking an aeroplane and, you know, looking at all those countries in between England and Shanghai. And I just thought, you're going to miss all this amazing stuff along the way. Yeah. Why would I want to do that and be in the sky? I want to be down on the ground where I can see it and experience it.
Beautiful. What was for you the most, like when you think about the 6 weeks
of traveling to Shanghai, what was like one of the experiences that really left like a footprint in your heart, like as a memory?
I think my greatest memory of that journey, so the trains were, you know, the feature of it. And the 5 days between Moscow and Irkutsk and in Lake Baikal, we're just going through these birch forests, playing chess with crazy Russians. that kind of immersion into a completely different world was amazing.
It sounds beautiful. And I imagine you arrive in Shanghai. In what way would you say these 6 weeks changed something inside of you? Like, would you say that you like arrived as a different person than you started the journey?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing was I fell in love with this idea of traveling slowly around our planet, and the getting to experience all of those subtle transitions when you travel by land, and the subtle change in culture and climate and how the landscape changes. But most of all, the people along the way, the little iterations of changes when you travel that way. And so it was really that absolute fascination with people and the planet that then led me to wanting to travel more without planes. Hence, I ended up traveling by boat.
Yeah.
So in that respect, it changed everything that was to come.
I mean, I think it's so... I think it's so cool, and I think it's so impressive. I mean, the thing I love about the story is that you just... did something which is actually so obvious that it's not so healthy for our soul even to travel so fast with a plane. But you just did something what everyone does. You just said, no, it's not the way I want to do it. And which gave you so much and even, shaped your way, I guess, in some,
exactly.
in some way.
And no jet lag.
Yeah, no jet lag. Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. So, okay. Then you decided to go to Australia, but you already knew no plane for me.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
So what happened then?
So I started looking for ways to hitchhike on boats around the world. The previous year I had gone east. This year I wanted to head west and cross the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans. And when I was looking for opportunities, so literally just Googling, you know, ways to hitchhike on boats, and I came across this boat called Earth Race. And if you look up this boat, it basically looks like a space rocket.
Yeah, it looks amazing. I remember from your presentation, it looks amazing. Mm. Yeah, like this future boat. Yeah, it's really cool.
Exactly. And they had just broken the round the world speed record, gone around the world in 60 days.
Amazing.
But they did it running on 100% biodiesel, fuel from all renewable sources. And so for me, I saw this project and thought, wow, amazing looking boat, but also a project to prove the feasibility of renewable energy, something that I was passionate about. And so I wrote to the skipper asking if I could get a place on the crew of his second trip around the world, which was to do a promotional tour to visit 120 cities to talk to schools, politicians, and the media about renewable energy. And so the skipper said, come and meet us for the weekend in Brighton in the UK and see how you get on. And so I turned up in Brighton with enough stuff to last me for a weekend. And I didn't end up going home for another 923 days.
What? That is amazing. So it worked out well, I guess.
It did.
The weekend. Yeah. Okay.
I got the job.
That's amazing. Okay.
Yeah, and off we went. So we first did some stops in the UK and Europe, and then we crossed the Atlantic. We stopped at Caribbean islands. We went through the Panama Canal, and then we crossed the Pacific. And that's, I think, where then things started to change for me, crossing that Pacific Ocean, stopping at these amazing Polynesian communities and completely remote, uninhabited islands, but also seeing so many of the changes that are happening in our ocean that I literally had no idea about.
Yeah. Okay, before we go to the islands and to the to all the plastic as well, the plastic problem in the ocean, I just have one question. During the time on the boat, or I mean you almost live on boats and you're traveling like with how many people can be on the boat? Is it like 8 or 12 or
4 or 5?
4
on
or
that.
5.
Yeah.
Okay, so what does it with you like as when you're just with 4 or 5 people on a very small space sort of how is it for you like being out in the ocean, what is then how does your inner world look like in the moment where you feel like there's so much space around you and you're in the middle of the nature of ocean what does it with you?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you point out that you're in this wide open nature space, and that's very much how I feel. But a lot of people on the boat feel, I mean, that boat itself inside, it was like being in a submarine because it's a wave piercing boat. It's designed to go under the water. Yeah. So a lot of people found the boat very claustrophobic. But I remember taking off into the middle of this ocean with a group of people who thought in a completely different way to anyone that I'd ever met. Mm. I remember thinking, wow, my mind is just being blown wide open. So I found that environment, you know, really kind of freeing. Mm. And then one of the other things that I loved about being on the ocean is that you're constantly assessing your environment. So the wind is constantly shifting, the waves are constantly changing. And as a sailor, you have to respond to those changes. And certainly all of the sailing that I've done since, rather than that biofuel boat, you know, you have to shift your sails, you have to shift your course. And often your life depends on that response. You know, if you don't, then, then the consequences are pretty dire. So that's one of the things that I love, that constantly reacting to those changes and realizing that I needed to apply the same thing in my own life. I needed to react my own course, my own career to some of what I was seeing in the ocean.
That's beautiful. I think this is also something I learned because I surf. And what I learned when you surf, you have to keep the balance with nature and you have to be very aware of what's coming next and you have to adjust and you're just a part of it. It's not that you're separate or something, but I think this is what you said. It's very similar to life when you learn to go with the elements and to go with nature and to go with the rhythm as well. And yeah, it's very beautiful. So then you arrived at this Polynesian islands and what happened there?
So when we got there, I mean, first we had traveled through these very remote parts of the ocean and started to see plastic floating around. And I remember looking over the side, we would stop each morning and have a swim. We didn't have any water on board. So we had to have a wash in the ocean every morning if it was calm enough. And I remember just seeing a toothbrush floating past me. And at the time, we were 1,000 miles from nearest land. And the closest human beings to us were in the space station in orbit above our heads. And there was this toothbrush floating past me. And I just remember thinking, this doesn't make any sense. You know, who does this toothbrush belong to and what is it doing out here? And so that was the kind of first trigger for me. And then we stopped at these small islands and we met locals who were struggling to even catch fish because the commercial fishing vessels had come in and emptied the waters of the fish that they once lived upon. And they were struggling to grow food in the ground because the rising sea levels had caused their soil to become too salty for their crops to grow. And so these island communities were now completely reliant on importing packaged food that needed to be imported and came all wrapped up in this plastic. And so seeing this plastic that then had nowhere to go, you know, there's no landfill, there's no safe incineration. Most of that was getting thrown on the beach, in the ocean, or they were burning it. Yeah. And, you know, seeing the kind of consequences of this, the toxics are being released through that burning and just generally the kind of pollution in the environment. And it's just totally not what I expected when I thought of a dreamy paradise Pacific island with turquoise ocean and white sandy beaches. And just really couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yeah, I mean, especially because it's, I mean, when you talk about it, to me, it feels so unfair that, that actually these beautiful islands, which have their own ecosystems, they're working for themselves. They do their fishing. They're good, like the way they were also the last 500 years, sort of. But now we come and we actually take everything away and even more bring them because of them being the, because they have now to get the food, as you said, like packaged, because they don't have fish anymore in plastic. I mean, it's just so paradox. So yeah, it just makes me angry. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we have been part of that process that's put them into the situation that they're in now.
Yeah. So what happened then?
So I think I had that kind of shift of, you know, actually there's perhaps something else I could be doing rather than going and being an architect. I always thought I would come back to architecture, but I was seeing a problem in these little islands that I actually thought I could do something about. Mm-hmm. So I thought, why not spend some time focusing on one of these issues, one of these islands? And so once we finished the Earthrace project in New Zealand, I then joined a sailing boat to go and sail back up to these islands and went back to Tonga in the South Pacific and ended up staying there for 6 months working on a long-term waste management system for these islands and also an enormous cleanup project on a couple of these islands in Tonga.
And when you were in Tonga, you were there for 6 months, and what would you say is because I can imagine, because I've been in Bali for some time, and I realized, because there's also a huge problem with plastic, and I was just thinking how, like, why? And then I realized that one of the biggest problems, I think, is that until the moment we brought plastic, everything they had was like natural trash, sort of, you know, you could just throw it in the nature, and nature would, how do you, like, recycle it, a banana or whatever. And the problem is that it doesn't work. So it's really also for, like, a cultural problem. I think that it's very difficult for people who haven't had anything that nature couldn't recycle. Now, all of a sudden, there is something that nature can't recycle.
Exactly. And that was one of the things I realized when I got to Tonga. At first, I thought it was infrastructure that was needed, you know, waste systems. But then I started to learn the Tongan language and realized that there wasn't even a word in their language for bin or for rubbish. Because, as you say, that concept of throwing something away into a controlled system instead of just back to nature, it didn't exist in their culture because it had never needed to.
Yeah.
And so it was not only infrastructure, but a whole new way of thinking about this new inorganic material.
And so when you were in Tonga, did you go to like the communities and the schools and you talked about it, or how did it work?
Yeah. So I spent 6 months working between the 11 schools on these two islands, working with each class each day, and then also the women's groups and the kind of leadership group of the village. on what the system might look like long term, but also just developing that understanding of the plastics issue and the fact that plastic just needed to be treated in a different way.
So which year was that? When have you been there?
That was 2009.
Wow, that's almost 10 years ago.
I know.
That's amazing. And have you been back since then?
I haven't, no. One of the colleagues who I ended up working on the project with, he managed to go back a year later, which was amazing to see some of the footage and the positive, you know, reports of how things were going a year on.
Yeah, so how did things change? Like, I mean, I guess you arrived on Tonga, there was a lot of plastic, there was not really like the knowledge about how to recycle plastic, what to do with plastic, and like what would you say were the biggest changes that you made?
Yeah, so mostly people wanted to do something. You know, they didn't want all of this rubbish all in their, you know, gardens and homes and beaches. But there was simply, you know, nowhere for it to go. And so through doing this huge cleanup where we had 3/4 of the whole population, 3,000 people come together and pick up 56 tons of rubbish.
Wow.
in just 5 hours.
What?
I know. So much trash on the coastlines. And so this was the project that we kind of did at the end. And it really helped people understand, you know, that there was somewhere that this waste could go. And so after that.
But what happened with the 56 tons of trash?
We had to take it away by container ship.
Okay.
Yeah. So some went to recycling and some went to safe landfill.
Okay. So you organized it that the trash would be moved away?
We did, yeah. Mm. We managed to get a shipping company to sponsor the removal of that waste.
That's amazing.
Yeah, which was really helpful in just helping the island get back to being trash free. Because obviously you can imagine if your whole island is covered in it, there's quite little incentive to then start changing. Whereas if you start with a clean island, it's much easier to keep it clean.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's a good thought. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So, and now do you know if they have developed some sort of system on their island, how to be more effective with the plastic?
Yeah. So I kept in touch with a few people there and they always assure me that it's very much in everybody's hearts and minds. This campaign that we led, Tauike Ma'a Aha Pai, which means keep Hapai beautiful, Hapai being the name of the islands. And so that's still very much embedded within the community there. One of the great challenges, though, they a few years ago experienced one of the strongest ever cyclones to hit that region. And it literally, the eye of the cyclone went over the roof of the house that I lived in when I was there with this community. And you know, 75% of the houses and the trees were taken with the cyclone. And these sorts of challenges just are absolutely enormous. They wipe out the community and the very little food crops that they were still able to grow get doused in salt water and salty sand. And it takes years for the land to recover.
Yeah.
Or they can then start growing new crops. So, you know, they've got their challenges right now, you know, with the debris from that's left after that kind of situation. And then just the state of emergency that you're in, you know, with trying to get food. And then you're literally 100% relying on the outside world to supply food and water to the islands.
Yeah. It's amazing. So, now we have 2018, so it's almost 10 years ago that you have been in Tonga. What happened in between since then?
So the time in Tonga really led me to also be interested in the idea of ocean plastic, the way plastic was moving around our planet, thousands of miles across oceans. And a lot of the experts who at the time were looking at that were based in California. So I headed over to California, and that's where I started to learn more about these gyres, these great big masses of plastic floating in the remote parts of our ocean. Yeah. And so I went on to set up an organization called Pangaea Exploration that we managed to get enough funds together from donors to buy a 72-foot sailing expedition vessel. And we set out then the following year, 2010, on the first voyage to the South Atlantic Gyre, this accumulation zone between Brazil and Africa. And we went out with scientists, but also filmmakers, journalists, artists, teachers, people who wanted to look at the issue more closely scientifically, but also document it and bring the findings back to land so that we could create change on the issue back here. And so that started in 2010. And I basically spent then the best part of the next 6 or 7 years at sea on board Sea Dragon, working on the plastic problem, also other toxic pollutants, chemicals, pesticides and flame retardants that get into the sea as well. We looked at fishery collapse. We looked at acidification and coral reef health, and just basically the whole health of our ocean and trying to better understand it.
That's amazing. And if you like, if you reflect on this last 8 or 9 years almost, what will you say? How did it change you as a human being, the way you see the world, the way you see the role of every individual in this like big planet? What would you say? How did it change you?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly learned a lot. I learned a lot about our planet, both scientifically, you know, and this better understanding some of these systems and the fact that kind of everything has consequences. You think that the ocean is so huge, and it is. Having sailed across it, it's huge. Water covers 70% of our planet, but it's not endless. And at the moment, sorry, I've got a noisy vehicle outside.
No problem.
It's gone. At the moment, you know, we treat the ocean like we can just carry on pulling and pulling fish out of it as if they'll never end. And we keep on throwing waste and chemicals into it as if it can keep on absorbing them. But really, it can't. There's so many indicators that our ocean is really in trouble. And so properly understanding that has been, you know, a huge learning and a kind of shift for me. But then also just learning about people and I think in a really positive way, the coming together of people from all different nationalities and all different sectors, really. You know, I'm lucky enough to spend my time with people who are working in policy and in industry and community leaders who are really kind of rallying together and saying, you know, we want to see a different world for the next generation, and we're prepared to make sacrifices to make that happen. And that's the community that I'm immersed in right now, which has been just, you know, such a privilege to be part of.
Yeah. Talking about like community and how people want to make a change, when I see the pictures of the ocean and of this huge, large plastic, giant is called?
Gyre, yeah.
Gyre, yeah. I mean, I feel a bit, I mean, it's so big, you actually don't really know what to do, sort of. You feel a little bit depressed or frustrated because it just is so big. So as a human being, what would you say, what can do every one of us to make a change there? Or what are possibilities? Because the thing that frustrates me so much is that I think that the other day I read a really interesting article about what the plastic actually is. So over 50% of the plastic are like big, like fisher nets and like big plastic things. And then the other 50% are like smaller plastic, microplastic. And I was just thinking that, like, all this, the industry that also earns so much money with the fishing and also taking all the fish out of the ocean, that no one, like, neither the countries nor the industry is taking responsibility. And I mean, I think we just need a solution on a very global scale. And what do you think? Like, what is the approach, what we could do to really make a change?
Yeah, I think for me, it comes down to we all have a role to play. And unfortunately, there's no silver bullet. There's no one answer that you can say, oh, if you do that, you will solve the problem. Yeah. But for me, I see that as an opportunity. I see it as saying, well, then what that really means is it includes all of us, regardless of our skill or our background. We all have an opportunity, a slightly different one each, but we all have an opportunity to be part of this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the first thing we can all do is reduce our own personal consumption of plastic.
Yeah.
And I think that message now is out there into the world. We all know that we should be avoiding as much plastic as we possibly can in our lives, particularly what we call single-use plastic, that plastic that is designed to be used once and then thrown away. And so if we can get those bags, those bottles, those straws, that packaging, all of that out of our lives, then we're going to be going a really long way to help solve this problem. But actually, I'm asking more than that. I'm saying, but how can you do even more than just your own consumption? How can you actually influence bigger change? And for each of us, it's different. For me, it's working with companies, being able to kind of stand on stage and try and inspire some of these industries to think about the design process of their products and how they actually think at the very source of this issue, how we actually create those changes. But for everybody, it's different. You know, if you're an engineer, then you might be looking at how you can prevent the plastic leaking into the ocean. If you are a policy or working in government, then you might look at how you can change legislation. If you're a teacher, you'll look at how you can actually affect more people through those that you inspire through your teaching. And we basically all have an opportunity, depending on what our skill set is. It's just slightly different.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's really beautiful. So it's really just to become aware of what everyone in the position they are, what we can do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and make a change there. Because I think it's with global warming, it's the biggest problem we have right now in the world. And I think it's so fascinating how it gets somehow ignored. Like, it's like as if people would think maybe the trash will just disappear one day. No, it won't. It's our job to actually clean it, because we put it there, right? So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all coming from, you know, it's coming from us, it's coming from land, it's coming from industry. Yeah.
And I know that you're also doing, I don't know exactly when you started with it, but you're doing the X Expedition, which is especially for women, right? Could you tell a little bit about it, what it is about?
Yeah, so this started in 2014 and is the current project I'm working on. And when I learned more about this plastics issue, and particularly the fact that it's breaking down into such tiny pieces when it gets into the ocean, and is very easy then for it to get into the food chain. We're now finding even in plankton, there's little pieces of plastic. There's certainly plenty in fish and in bigger marine mammals that we've kind of all seen the awful pictures of on social media. And that realization that it's getting into the food chain, I decided to look more at the kind of chemical implications of having plastic and these chemicals in, you know, potentially inside us, given that we're eating the fish and we all share this planet. And on doing that study to look at what we actually have inside us, I discovered that I have, of these 35 polluting chemicals that we tested for, I had 29 of these polluting chemicals inside my body. And this spurred a whole new direction for me, looking at kind of human health and how so many of these chemicals that get inside us, they are what we call endocrine disruptors. They mimic hormones and they stop those important chemical messages moving around our bodies, which at times of pregnancy and growing a fetus are so critical for that fetus development. And I also learned the only way we get rid of these chemicals is through childbirth and through breastfeeding and basically passing them on to the next generation. And what I realized is that although boys don't want these chemicals inside them either, us girls having these chemicals inside us is potentially a much greater impact on the next generation. And so realizing this very women-centered issue, we decided to put together an all-female team to sail across the North Atlantic Ocean to study this issue of plastics and the chemicals and toxics that get absorbed in those plastics and also our pollutants alongside them. And so we put together this amazing team of women and we set off across the North Atlantic Ocean into the most horrendous storm. And we spent 5 days in gale force winds with huge waves crashing over the boat. And these poor women, who not many of them were sailors, most of them were incredible in their own fields of waste management or filmmaking and policy and journalism. And we set out there to basically research this issue further, so to do the science, but also make a documentary and then take this issue to the global stage. The following year, we took it to the United Nations in Geneva and showcased our work. And really, this project just went from strength to strength. And we've now setting up for our 10th series, so our 10th episode of this voyage, which this year will be sailing across the North Pacific Ocean from Hawaii to Vancouver and on to Seattle with another amazing team of 14 women out there to really focus on this issue.
Wow, that is so amazing, so inspiring. So to just to recap that, the problem is that plastic in the ocean, because of the salt water and the sun, it gets into microplastic, right? Like this really, really tiny, tiny plastic that you can't even really see. Is that right? Right. So, and then the fish or the plankton, like somehow the microplastic gets into the, in the plankton or into the fishes because they eat it. And then we eat the fish and we get actually the chemicals from the plastic, through the fish into our bodies.
So that bit of the chain is the bit the scientists are trying to figure out at the moment. And there's a couple of things going on. One, obviously, these plastics are made with a lot of chemicals, anyway, that aren't good for us. Also, plastic is shown to actually absorb other polluting chemicals in the ocean and accumulate them, you know, together in this plastic that can then get into the food chain. But what we're unsure of at the moment is, while I know I have these chemicals inside me, it's really hard to prove where they came from. And it might have been through eating seafood, but it also might have been through just my general exposure to these chemicals. So, you know, we have flame retardant chemicals on our upholstery, on our clothing, on the pillows that we lie on every night. And, you know, so there's many other very direct sources that this pollution could be entering our bodies as well.
Okay. But it, like, it could be a very, I mean, it's very logical, right, to say that if the fish eats the plastic and we eat the fish, that probably it somehow gets also into our bodies. I mean,
absolutely.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah. What can we do about that? what is the solution here? Or what is your vision? Where are you going? Where do you see the planet, the nature, our health in 10 or 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, there's some things that we can do as individuals to help kind of protect ourselves from this. You know, we can think about the food that we eat. We can try and eat close to the source, so eating vegetables rather than meats and fish, and, you know, lower in the food chain, and we can just be more conscious about where our food comes from. But ultimately, it's very hard to to stop this impact of chemicals on us. It can literally even be in the air that we breathe. Yeah. And so ultimately, the change needs to happen at the source. Yeah. We need to stop producing these chemicals so that they're not in our environment for them to then get into our bodies. The problem is, so many of these chemicals, you know, we didn't design them because, you know, to intentionally pollute the planet. We designed them because they all have such useful properties that we would struggle to get through our daily lives without. You know, many of them are flame retardants that are in our electronics that, you know, prevent them from combusting and starting house fires. They are the waterproof repellent on our outdoor gear that keeps us waterproof when we're out on the mountain or out on the ocean. And they stop our frying pans from, you know, sticking to all of our food. Like, these really useful chemicals and pesticides that we put on our land that help produce bigger yields for the food crops. And so what the challenge is right now is, yes, it's very easy to say we need to ban these things, but at the same time, we need alternatives because we've got so many people living on planet Earth, and we all need feeding, and we all need to get around places, and we're all living increasingly fast-paced lives that rely on these amazing inventions to keep up our quality of life. And so something's got to give. You know, we either need to find new solutions for some of these things, or we need to adjust our own expectations of how we expect to be able to live our lives and have everything instantly, you know, and move in such a pace that the rest of the world can kind of keep up.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think actually this is one of the biggest human challenges, that we, our brain and our nature is wired that we want to have everything now. And it's very difficult for us to be patient and to also think not only about this moment, not only about our life, but also about all the lives that will follow. And I mean, I think we just have a responsibility also for the generations that follow. And that is sometimes very difficult for our brain to understand. And so I think, yeah, sometimes we have to act more from the soul and from the heart and from a place of connection, where we just know, okay, what I do actually has an effect on everyone on this planet, sort of. And to be willing to think not only about oneself, but about everyone, and also about our nature. And I remember a few years ago, I read a quote from an Indian in the States, and I don't remember exactly the words, but it was that the moment the white man touched Earth, it started bleeding. So that we actually, that we don't care enough about our Earth, about this home that we have. And I think this is really something that has to change so much, that we remember that we are part of the Earth. We are not owning it.
And exactly. We're not the first class passengers.
Yes, exactly.
just along for the ride.
Exactly.
But having said that, you know, sort of not wanting to kind of dwell on that doom and gloom, it's like, yes, you know, we've caused a lot of these problems, but there's also just so much beauty on our planet, and just amazing instances every day of how, you know, humankind is the most amazing thing. How we've proven we have the ability to come together to overcome these huge challenges that we faced. And so I really feel that we can do this.
Yeah, I also think that it's such a beautiful chance, what you said, to come together and to actually to go together for something that we all care about, instead of fighting about things that actually don't matter. So that maybe it's actually a good thing to make a global peace contract, to understand that we only can solve all these problems if we are going hand in hand and not focusing on things that are actually just not so important.
Exactly.
So how can we support you? How can we support the X Expedition? How is, like, in which way can I, the community, the people listening to the podcast, how can we support your amazing work?
Yeah, so we actually recently built a website which has a whole load of tools for people who basically want to get involved on a lot of the things that I've been talking about today. It's called oceanchangemakers.com. And if you're interested in working on this plastics issue, figuring out how in your community or your kid's school or your workplace, or maybe you have an even bigger opportunity because you run a business or, you know, you have a way to kind of inspire and influence, then there's lots of resources there basically to help people take that next step and be part of those solutions.
Okay, amazing. I will put the link definitely in the show notes. Is there any other way we can support you? Any other link? I mean, you can send it also to me. I will put everything in the show notes. But is there anything else that if someone is listening now and thinking, I really want to support Emily, I want to somehow help her. Is there any other way that, that you can be helped?
Yeah, so you can also check out xexpedition.com, which is our all women's sailing voyages. If you're looking for an adventure, you can apply to join a future crew. So we are full now for 2018, but soon we'll be announcing the 2019 voyages. And so that's a really great way to get, you know, fully stuck in and involved with what's happening. And there's also a space on there if you're willing to donate to the work that we're doing, you know, that will go to a really great place to increase the impact of our work. And please do, you know, talk about what we're doing, share what we're doing. There's X Expedition has got channels, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Please go check those out. And also my own website, emilypenn.co.uk, and my own channels. I'm constantly talking about this issue and sharing opportunities to get involved and be part of it.
Amazing. And you're an amazing speaker. I love to watch your TED Talks. And so, yeah. I always have at the end of the podcast, I have questions I ask every of my guests. So the first question is, imagine it's the last day of your life. You had a beautiful life, very, very successful. Actually, the ocean is clean now from plastic. And so everything went very, very well. But there was like a technical problem and there is no website anymore from you. There are no TED Talks. There is no blog, nothing from you left. But I come to you and I have a white paper and a pen, and I give you the white paper and the pen, and I say to you, Emily, you can now write on this paper three of your biggest wisdoms you would like the world to remember, the three things you learned in your life you would like to pass on. What would you write down?
Wow, it's a big question.
I know.
I'm sure I'll have a lot more wisdom at that point in my life. But if I had to think of them right now, I think for me, it kind of sounds maybe cheesy because I remember hearing this a lot growing up, but that idea of following your heart. And I think I didn't really understand what that meant when I was growing up. And then when I actually figured out how to follow my heart, I now realize how important it is and really what that means.
How did you learn that?
What's that?
How did you learn to follow your heart? What changed?
Yeah, I think by doing it, by trying. And there was that moment when, you know, I had my architecture degree and lots of people kind of hoping, you know, great things from me in terms of the architecture world and my academic career. And instead, I was on this little island in Tonga, chatting to, you know, the local community about plastic and waste. And there were a lot of people at home that just thought that, you know, I'd kind of lost the plot. But I felt like I was onto something, you know, I really did. I just really believed in it. And I don't know why. It was sort of beyond rational belief. But I just really, there was this drive from inside me that just kept saying, you know, there's something here. You know, this makes no freaking sense. And therefore, there needs to be a solution for it. And it's worth fighting for. You know, and then years later, I'm standing on stage in front of Prince Charles and Prince of Monaco and a few presidents and prime ministers talking about that time when I was washed up in Tonga on the island. And, you know, for me, that's that kind of full circle of actually, yeah, it was worth carrying on following. I think maybe follow your gut. You know, it's that, what is that instinct that's driving inside you, that little thing that's just saying, keep going. And I also think, though, we struggle to actually hear our gut sometimes. We struggle to hear that little voice that's saying, you know, you're onto something, keep going. And so figuring out how to kind of block out all of that other noise is really key as well.
Beautiful. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Nice.
Does that build my paper?
No, not yet. Or would you say it's three wisdoms in one?
Yeah, I think, you know, following your heart or following your gut, and then maybe the second one, like, you know, trying to block out that noise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is so important because people are constantly trying to tell us what to do and what to think and what to buy and what to wear and what, you know, all of this, and trying to actually separate what you feel from what everybody else thinks is hard. And so figuring out a way to block out that noise is so important if you want to be able to reach your true potential.
That's beautiful. Great. Thank you. And the other question is there a book you read that changed your life, or a book that you would recommend, a book you give to friends where you say you have to read this?
There's really not. So I'm not a reader.
You're a liver.
I literally have not read a book in a decade, and I learn everything through doing and through meeting people.
That's amazing.
Some amazing people.
Yeah.
The privilege to meet and, you know, be on watch with on the boat at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're trying to stay awake and think of conversation to so that you can keep steering the boat in the right direction. And it's those moments that I've managed to kind of glean knowledge and really develop thinking with incredible people. I know there's so many brilliant books out there. And so if reading is your way of learning, then do it. But if not, don't be afraid to just put the books down and start talking to people around you.
Yeah, that's a great advice. Thank you so much. That's amazing. Emily, I really have to say, I'm so happy that we could talk, and I'm so inspired by you. And I really want to say thank you in behalf of all the people listening right now to that interview. And you're so inspiring, and I'm so grateful that you actually listened to your heart, that you learned to turn down that noise, and that you just went your way. And I'm sure that that you really will make a huge, huge change and impact in this world. And I just hope that you are really proud of yourself, and that you see that you are a hero. And and just thank you so much for being on this planet. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you, Laura, for sharing the story and pulling out some of the really interesting threads of what's happened along the way.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass dir dieses Interview gefallen hat, dass du ganz viel Inspiration auch für dich daraus mitnehmen konntest und dass du gesehen hast, dass ja, in der Welt gibt es verdammt viele echt große Probleme, aber das ist kein Grund, den Kopf hängen zu lassen. Im Gegenteil, steh dafür auf, was dir wichtig ist, geh dafür los, werd einfach aktiv und behalte deinen Optimismus bei, denn wir sehen, wie bei Emily zum Beispiel, diese Frau ist so optimistisch und so voller Freude dabei, und ich glaube, genau darum geht es auch einfach. Und ich würde mich natürlich wie immer freuen, wenn dir die Folge gefallen hat, wenn du bei mir bei Instagram vorbeikommst und unter das Bild oder bei Facebook kommentierst, was hast du für dich mitgenommen? Was hast du über Emily gelernt? Was hast du über dich gelernt in dem Interview? Was sind für Gedanken? Wofür engagierst du dich? Was ist für dich wichtig? Teil einfach deine Gedanken mit mir auf Instagram und auf Facebook. Ich finde es immer echt wunderschön, in diese Kommunikation zu gehen und deine Kommentare zu lesen. Das ist einfach, das ist der Knaller. Es ist einfach schön. Und genau, @LauraMarlinaSeiler findest du mich auf jeden Fall. Und wie gesagt, du kannst jetzt kostenlos die Higher Self Inspirations holen. Das ist ein kostenloses Package einfach für dich, für deine Seele, für dein Higher Self. Ein bisschen Inspiratione für die Seele kannst du dir einfach kostenlos runterholen. Ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude auch damit. Und ansonsten, ja, war es, glaube ich, von meiner Seite. Genau, das Gewinnspiel ist vorbei. Wir hatten ja ein Gewinnspiel. Da werden wir jetzt morgen die Gewinner ziehen. Da bin ich auch schon sehr gespannt, wer da gewonnen hat, mit wem ich essen gehen werde. Und die Gewinner werden wir auf jeden Fall per E-Mail benachrichtigen. Und ansonsten, ja, hoffe ich einfach, es geht dir gut, dass du dein Licht in die Welt bringst, dass du voller Freude, voller Schöpferkraft, voller Higher Self-Energie in die Welt rausgehst und ja, dein Licht einfach teilst, dass du bitte, bitte, bitte immer daran denkst, dass du wirklich so unfassbar wertvoll bist. Ich weiß, in manchen Momenten vergessen wir das, aber ich möchte, dass du dich daran erinnerst, dass du ein Original bist, dass du einzigartig bist, dass du wertvoll bist und dass die Welt dich braucht. Die Welt braucht dich, die Welt braucht das, was du für die Welt hast, und hab den Mut, hab die Freude, die Liebe, es einfach in die Welt zu bringen, das, was dich begeistert, mit der Welt zu teilen. Und ich verspreche dir, es wird Menschen geben, die werden dich hören, die werden dich sehen und die werden dankbar sein, dass es dich gibt, dass du dich gezeigt hast, dass du deine Liebe, deine Leidenschaft, deine Begeisterung, dass du es mit der Welt teilst. Auch wenn man es sich vielleicht in dem Moment jetzt gerade noch nicht so richtig vorstellen kann. Ich war da auch mal. Genau. Und ja, den Spiritual Sunday gibt's wieder. Wenn du möchtest, melde dich da einfach an. Wir waren jetzt am Sonntag über 2000 Menschen morgens live. Also wenn du Bock hast, irgendwie am Sonntagmorgen dabei zu sein, dann freue ich mich natürlich. Kannst dich auch kostenlos anmelden. Und ja, das war es von meiner Seite, glaube ich. Fühl dich umarmt. Ich schicke dir eine riesengroße Herzensumarmung. Ganz viel Liebe, ganz viel Licht, ganz viel Sonne, ganz viel Freude, ganz viel Inspiration und Kreativität. Alles, was du gerade irgendwie vielleicht brauchst. Und ich freue mich, wenn wir uns auf Instagram miteinander connecten. Und genau, in diesem Sinne, rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.